Welcome back, everyone. You know, it's funny how we humans operate sometimes. We seem almost hardwired to avoid the really tough questions, don't we? Especially the ones about ourselves.
Oh, absolutely. We're masters of self-persuasion, building these elaborate stories to convince ourselves everything's fine, even when maybe deep down we suspect it isn't.
It's like a defense mechanism, I suppose. But today, we're not sidestepping. We're actually taking a look at one of the most, well, profound and deeply personal questions anyone could probably face. Am I an addict?
And just to be really clear up front, this isn't about us diagnosing anyone. That's not our role at all.
No, definitely not. Our aim here is more about shedding some light on a path toward honest self-reflection. And we're grounding this conversation in a really significant piece of writing.
That's right. We're drawing from a document published by Narcotics Anonymous, which is titled quite directly, "Am I an Addict?" It was specifically created to help people navigate this exact question.
So the goal today, for you listening, is to kind of unpack what's inside this document, to look at the framework it offers for thinking about a really, really sensitive subject.
And a key part of that framework, right from the start, is emphasizing that only the individual can actually answer that question for themselves.
Exactly. It's about providing the tools, the insights maybe, that can lead to some significant self-awareness, whatever the answer turns out to be.
It's like holding up a mirror, using the wisdom of people who've been down that road, rather than pointing a finger.
So let's dive into that. The document starts with a really powerful statement, doesn't it?
It does, right at the beginning. Only you can answer this question. Simple words, but incredibly profound.
Sounds easy enough on the surface, but the document quickly explains why it's actually, well, quite difficult.
Yeah, it points out that all through our usage, we told ourselves, I can handle it. That's a really common refrain, isn't it?
Oh, completely. The universal self-assurance.
Right. And maybe, for some, that felt true initially. But then there's this shift, this insidious change where, as the document puts it, the drugs handled us.
That's a chilling phrase. The drug handled us. It's a complete reversal of control. Like you think you're steering the ship, but actually the current's just taking you wherever it wants.
Precisely. And following that, it offers a definition that's remarkably straightforward.
What's the definition?
An addict is a person whose life is controlled by drugs. That's it.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay. No complex medical jargon, just control or lack thereof.
Exactly. It cuts through a lot of the noise and the preconceived ideas about what an addict is that people carry around, stereotypes, images.
Things we pick up from media or just general assumptions.
Right. And by setting those aside, it opens up space for real identification. And then, crucially, it makes this point. There is nothing shameful about being an addict once you begin to take positive action.
That's huge, isn't it? Shifting it from shame to action, that reframes everything.
It really does. It moves it from a place of stigma to a place of potential recovery, potential solutions.
And the credibility here comes from who wrote this, right?
Yes, the document mentions that the questions inside were, quote, written by recovering addicts in Narcotics Anonymous. That shared experience is central.
So it's not an outsider telling you what's what, it's people who've lived it.
Exactly. And the invitation is basically if you can identify with our problems, you may be able to identify with our solution. It's about finding common ground, that shared journey.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, so the document uses a specific tool to help with this self-reflection.
It does. It lays out 29 questions. And it's really important to stress these aren't like a test you passed or fail.
Right, no score at the end that says, congratulations, you're not an addict, or the opposite.
Precisely. They're prompts. They're designed to make you think honestly about your life, your experiences with drugs, and the impact they've had. Holding up that mirror we mentioned.
Okay. Can you give us a feel for what kinds of questions they ask? Are they all focused just on the drug use itself?
They cover a really wide range. Some are about the act of using, like, do you ever use alone? Which points towards, maybe isolation or hiding the behavior.
That's different from social use, definitely.
Right. Or there's, have you ever substituted one drug for another, thinking that one particular drug was the problem?
The old switcheroo. Classic rationalization, isn't it? Oh, it's not me, it's that drug. If I just switch to this one, I'll be fine. Like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, maybe?
Well, perhaps. It definitely speaks to that attempt to manage the unmanageable by changing the surface details rather than the underlying pattern.
Okay, what else?
Other questions touch on integrity, like, have you ever manipulated or lied to a doctor to obtain prescription drugs?
Oof, that's getting into some uncomfortable territory for sure.
And how it seeps into daily life. Do you regularly use a drug when you wake up or when you go to bed? or the real-world consequences.
Like work or finances.
Exactly. Has your job or school performance ever suffered from the effects of your drug use? And do you put the purchase of drugs ahead of your financial responsibilities?
That's a big one. If getting drugs becomes more important than, say, paying rent or buying food, that's a pretty clear sign things are off kilter.
It is. And then some questions go even deeper into core feelings and basic needs.
Such as?
Do you feel it is impossible for you to live without drugs or the physical impact? Does using you interfere with your sleeping or eating?
Basic life functions being disrupted.
Yes. And then there's the question about ignoring the obvious. Do you continue to use despite negative consequences?
So even when bad things are happening because of the drug use, you keep doing it anyway.
Right. And finally, after guiding you through all these areas, it asks, very simply, do you think you might have a drug problem?
Just puts it right out there. After all that reflection, it asks for your assessment.
Exactly. But what's really key here, and the document makes this explicit, is that the actual number of yes responses wasn't as important as how we felt inside and how addiction had affected our lives.
So it's not about hitting some magic number of yes answers. It's more about the feeling behind the answers.
Precisely. It's qualitative, not quantitative. You can say yes to only a few, but if those few hit home, if they resonate with a deep feeling of things being out of control or life being unmanageable.
Then that internal recognition is what really matters.
That's the core idea, because as the document also points out, addiction is an insidious disease.
Insidious, that's a strong word. What does that mean in this context? How does it sneak up on you?
It means it's gradual, it's subtle, but ultimately very harmful. It doesn't just affect the moments you're actually using. It slowly weaves its way into everything.
Like what kind of things?
Relationships, work ethic, finances, hobbies, how you see yourself, your self-esteem. It can subtly corrode trust, change your priorities, shift who you hang out with.
All while you might be thinking, oh, my relationship problems are separate, or my work issues are just because my boss is difficult.
Exactly. You might not connect the dots. And that's why the document stresses the different drugs we used were not as important as why we used them and what they did to us.
So it's less about what substance and more about the function it serves and the overall impact. Doesn't matter if it's alcohol, pills, street drugs.
Right. The focus shifts from the specific agent to the pattern of use, the reasons behind it, and the often hidden pervasive consequences across your whole life.
Okay, so the questions provide this mirror. The definition is clear. Why is it still so hard for people to look in that mirror and accept what they see? This is where the human talent for rationalization really kicks into high gear, I imagine.
Oh, absolutely. And the document anticipates this perfectly. It actually lists some of the common ways people try to dismiss the possibility.
Like what? What are the greatest hits of denial?
Well, there's the straightforward dismissal. Oh, those questions don't make sense. Just rejecting the tool itself.
Right. This mirror is faulty. Must be.
Exactly. Or the classic, I'm different defense. I know I take drugs, but I'm not an addict. I have real emotional family job problems.
Ah, yes. My problems are real, unlike those other people's problems, which are just addiction. It's amazing how we can compartmentalize like that, isn't it?
It's a powerful defense mechanism. Mm. The source also includes things like, I'm just having a tough time getting it together right now.
The temporary setback excuse.
Or projecting the solution onto the future. I'll be able to stop when I find the right person and to get the right job, etc.
Always pinning the hoat on some external change rather than looking inward.
These are all ways of essentially kicking the can down the road, delaying that necessary confrontation with the problem itself.
But the document is pretty blunt about the necessity of that confrontation, right?
Very blunt. It states clearly, if you are an addict, you must first admit that you have a problem with drugs before any progress can be made toward recovery.
That first step, admitting it.
Yes. And those 29 questions, if you approach them honestly, are designed to show you exactly how using drugs has made your life unmanageable.
Unmanageable. What does that really mean? Does it just mean chaos, like losing your job or house?
It can mean those things, absolutely. But it's broader than that. It's about a loss of control, a feeling of powerlessness over the substance and its consequences.
So wanting to stop, but not being able to, or maybe stopping for a bit, but always going back.
Yes. Or just life feeling like it's spinning out of control, relationships breaking down, emotional instability, health issues piling up, where your choices feel dictated by the addiction, not by you.
Okay. That first admission is the absolute prerequisite for change then.
According to this source, yes. And it doesn't sugarcoat the alternative. It warns that addiction is a disease which, without recovery, ends in jails, institutions, and death.
That's incredibly stark.
It is. It's meant to convey the seriousness, the life-or-death nature of the situation for many. The document also notes a common turning point. Many people sought help because drugs had stopped doing what we needed them to do.
Meaning the escape wasn't working anymore, the good feelings were gone, maybe?
Exactly. What started as a solution, or seems like one, becomes the primary problem. It starts taking things away instead of giving anything.
And the document lists what it takes.
Yes. Our pride, self-esteem, family, loved ones, and even our desire to live. It talks about this deep internal suffering, calling it our own private hell was within us.
That sounds utterly bleak, but there's a but coming, isn't there?
There is. Right after painting that picture of despair, it offers a path out, saying that if you want help, you can find it in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous.
So from the depths of that private hell, there's an offer of connection and help.
Yes, that transition from isolation and despair to hope and community is central to the message.
Okay, so someone reaches that point. They've maybe answered the questions, felt that resonance, admitted the unmanageability. What happens next, according to the NA literature? How does that help actually manifest?
Well, the document describes the experience of walking into that first meeting, often feeling completely defeated, in defeat, and didn't know what to expect. Total vulnerability.
Must be incredibly daunting.
Absolutely. But then something shifts. It says that after attending meetings, we began to feel that people cared and were willing to help. That human connection starts to break through the isolation.
Finding people who actually get it, maybe for the first time.
Exactly. Being understood, not judged. And even when maybe your own mind is filled with doubt, the fellowship offers hope by insisting that we could recover.
Hearing it from others who've been there, that must be powerful.
Immensely. The feeling of being surrounded by fellow addicts, we realized that we were not alone anymore. That sense of shared struggle and shared hope is described as a huge catalyst.
A sense of belonging.
Yes. And the document is clear. Recovery is what happens in our meetings. It frames recovery as an ongoing process nurtured within that community. And it makes a very direct statement. By putting recovery first, the program works.
Putting recovery first, that implies a major shift in priorities.
It does. It requires commitment. And underpinning this process are what the NA Basic Text calls three essential realizations. They're quite profound, maybe even disturbing at first glance.
Okay, what are they?
The first one is, we are powerless over addiction and our lives are unmanageable.
Powerless and unmanageable. That sounds like giving up.
It's framed not as giving up, but as admitting the reality of the situation, admitting that willpower alone isn't enough, that the problem is bigger than your individual ability to control it. It's the necessary step before accepting help.
Okay. Acknowledging the need for something beyond yourself. What's the second one?
The second is, although we are not responsible for our disease, we are responsible for our recovery.
Ah, that's a crucial distinction. You didn't choose the illness, but you do have to choose the path to wellness, responsibility versus blame.
Exactly. It assigns agency for the solution without assigning blame for the problem. It empowers the individual to take action for their own recovery.
Very important. And the third?
We can no longer blame people, places, and things for our addiction. We must face our problems and our feelings.
Wow. So stop pointing fingers outwards and start looking inwards. Take ownership of your internal state, your reactions, your part in it all.
Precisely. It's about moving away from being a victim of circumstances and actively engaging with your own emotional landscape, your own issues, which addiction often masks or numbs.
That requires a tremendous amount of courage, I'd imagine, facing all that.
It does. And that's likely why the fellowship aspect is so emphasized. You're not doing it alone. And this leads to the final, really powerful statement in this section.
Which is?
The ultimate weapon for recovery is the recovering addict.
The ultimate weapon. That's striking. It speaks to that peer power again, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. The power of lived experience, of mutual support, of one person who's found recovery helping another who's still struggling.
Yeah.
That's presented as the most potent force for change.
So wrapping this up, we've been taking a look at this NA document, Am I an Addict? It really lays out a path for very personal self-examination, not giving answers, but providing a structure, a mirror, to help you find your own.
That's the essence of it.
Yeah.
It consistently brings it back to the individual's internal experience and their personal journey towards acknowledging the impact of drugs on their life.
And we want to reiterate that the answer to that core question, am I an addict? Mm-hmm. It really does remain deeply personal. Only you can answer that for yourself. We just wanted to unpack the insights from this specific source to maybe help inform that reflection.
Offering the framework, the context from those who created it out of their own experiences.
Exactly. And, you know, thinking about this whole process, it leads to a final thought, maybe something for you to consider. If facing this really difficult, uncomfortable question about addiction can actually be a doorway to freedom, to recovery, to a different kind of life, it makes you wonder, doesn't it? What other uncomfortable but maybe essential truths are we avoiding in our own lives?
The things we expertly sidestep.
Right. What other potential for real growth, for deeper self-awareness, might be hiding just behind those questions we find it so easy to ignore or rationalize away?
That's definitely something worth reflecting on.
Indeed. Something to think about. Until next time, keep exploring. Keep asking those questions.